guys. Bon Appetit Foodcast. I'm Adam Rappaport. All right, this week we've got Chris Morocco and Carla Lolly Music on, talking about holiday mains, those centerpiece dishes you sit out at a, you know, like an open house party, a Christmas dinner, maybe even a New Year's dinner. Chris developed a bunch of them for our December issue, all of which you can also find online at bonappetit.com. Plus, we got a web-only recipe for pork roast that we'll be talking about, too. All right, let's do this. Chris Morocco, your second straight week on the Bon Appetit Foodcast.
I know. It's been a big December for me.
if you missed it last week, Chris was talking about holiday cookies. And this week, he's on talking about holiday main courses with Carla Lolly Music.
Hello.
Carla, you're just a regular. You're on all the time.
I love being here. I just wait for the rest of you guys to show up. I just like to be in this room.
Just hang out here.
There is a sofa in our studio. Just sort of crashed over there. Carla, come on, let's go. Wakes up. All right, so we're talking about holiday sort of mains, like main roasts and stuff. And I think there's a couple of different scenarios in my mind, like when you bring out the nice glistening ham or the roast beef and whatnot, and like, you kind of have like that all day open house sort of thing. You have like the Christmas dinner. I would also put New Year's Eve dinner in a separate category. That's kind of a zhuzhier sort of thing personally.
Yeah. And then a lot of people entertain on New Year's Day too.
Oh, yes.
Which is like a really nice other opportunity to have an open house back.
Yeah. I love that sort of like we were just talking to Brad Leone the other day from the BA Test Kitchen. And Brad was saying, I forget what he was going to make. Did we talk to him about it?
No.
He was going to, basically all the Italian relatives coming over anytime in Jersey between the hours of like 11 a.m. and 7 p.m.
Great.
And like 60 different people throughout the day. I'm like, that's a lot of work. But so Chris, you have a story in the December issue, Mains of the Day. Who came up with that headline?
I actually did.
Oh, very good.
This is one of those rare moments where like the recipe idea you pitch, or like the story idea you pitch in a meeting, kind of makes it all the way through to the end zone, if you will.
Wow.
So it's like you pitch the headline, then you're like, oh shit, I have to do the story now.
Okay,
I figure out what that story is. But all right, so the opening, the cover sort of star of the story is slow roast beef. Can we talk about this as something to sort of set out for that sort of all day open house sort of hang?
Yeah, you know, my way in was just the feeling of, you know, with entertaining around the holidays, you know, unlike Thanksgiving, which is its own specific kind of like confluence of people and food, but all kind of driving towards this one moment where everybody's just going to kind of magically like take their seats and you're going to eat this meal all together kind of at the same time. You know, around other holidays, I feel like the all day kind of entertaining thing kind of comes into play. You kind of need food that can kind of hang out and
it doesn't
still
have to be piping
delicious.
Hot or perfectly plated for everybody.
Not at all. And so part of, you know, doing this slow roast beef was just the idea that in order to get a beef roast on the table and have it be as compelling 2 hours after it hits the table as it was like when it was still kind of warm from the oven or whatever, is that it has to have all its juices, it has to have all the flavor, you know, you kind of want in there and still be super delicious. So, you know, having it be delicious, you know, after that 2 hour, you know, after it hit the 2 hour mark on your table, is that you have to kind of be super gentle with the cooking process. So that means we, instead of searing it and then putting it into the oven, we are actually going to roast it.
Wait, what is it, first of all? Because anytime people say roast beef, I'm like, what does that mean? Like, is this like a shoulder? Is it a rib? Is like, where are we on the cow right
now?
It can mean so many different things.
But what does it mean to you, Chris Morocco?
To me, it means a strip loin roast or a strip roast. So basically, that is a New York strip, but
so when you
roast
go to like a fancy
form.
Steakhouse and you get so this is like the whole strip before they slice it into steaks.
Exactly. You know, and we've certainly done ribeye roasts in the past, and there are other, you know, there's like eye of round roasts and tenderloin roasts, but the New York strip roast is a phenomenal roast because it's nice and compact and it's well marbled. It doesn't take forever to cook and it doesn't take forever to rest.
It's also unlike a prime rib of beef, which is also very traditional around the holidays. Those are exorbitantly expensive, and additionally they're delicious, but they have a ton of interior, not well marbled fat, but like fat pockets. And in the strip loin, you've got a good amount of fat, also a really great beefiness. You've got bones if you want them, but it doesn't have that.
I think that's an AC/DC song. got bones if you want them.
But that's the strip loin's just got that great beefy flavor.
I could talk about beef for a while, but if you look at a ribeye, which is the ribeye is the steak version of the prime rib, which is the whole cut of meat before you slice it. But it's various muscles and interconnected little pockets of fat that are kind of wobbly and glue. And whereas the strip loin is just like, it's kind of one just
it's
cohesive
one
muscle that you can slide through. It's marbled, but not as richly fatty as a prime rib. It's easier to deal with, and there's a sort of consistency to it that you don't get in a prime rib, where a lot of times a prime rib, like the outside will get medium, but the inside could still be medium rare, and some fat renders and some fat doesn't.
Yep.
And this is just an easier one to deal with. And you call for a 4-pound one.
Exactly. Yeah. A 4-pound strip loin roast can feed a lot of people, especially if you're going to put it on Parker House rolls, kit it out with some, you know, kind of other elements, you know, like
horseradish cream sauce.
What
goes into that? Just like prepared horseradish and sour cream, essentially?
Yeah. I put a little yogurt in there. You know, I can't help myself just to keep it kind of like lighter and in that tangy kind of realm, but you know, not just pure, you know, sour cream. Nothing wrong with that. So this goes into the oven at a mere 200 degrees.
Seasoned aggressively. Salt and pepper.
Yep. Yeah, you can go up to 2 days. Salt and pepper, and actually rosemary. Like, we make a real kind of sticky paste of garlic, rosemary, and salt and pepper and olive oil that goes on there. And
you say loosely cover with plastic wrap and chill at least 12 hours and up to 2 days. And the longer you chill it, the more the sort of the meat absorbs the seasoning
completely, and it's important for that seasoning to kind of be on there. And it's nice if it even just the very surface of the beef, you know, kind of dries, because after that roasting process, where you're taking it to kind of around like 120 degrees, you're gonna rest that meat and then sear it. And when you sear,
all right, so hold on a second. Okay. Because you're saying, so you've got this 4-pound cut of meat, and you're roasting it at just 200 degrees?
Mm-hmm. Just 200 degrees on a rack, so air can kind of circulate around it. Because the thing is this, one of my pet peeves in, you know, kind of recipes and with cooking is, you know, it's not all about that high heat, you know, razzle-dazzle, flames shooting everywhere.
Like in the
movies.
You know,
sparks flying, like in the movies. Movies that I've probably watched and liked, you know. But still, like, when it comes down to reality, when you draw out the cooking process, you are creating like less violence, if you will, inside that meat. You are forcing less water to the center of that piece of meat and, you know, kind of concentrating all those juices that then you need lots of time to redistribute. And the difference is this. So if you kind of cook, you know, a roast at a very high temperature, let's say you even nail the internal temp, pull it at 118, you rest it for too short a time, or even if you rest it an adequate amount of time, you're going to get some pooling juices. You're going to lose moisture from that cut of meat. And will it be delicious, you know, 5 minutes after you slice it? Sure. But is it going to be delicious 2 hours later when all the juices have kind of run out of the meat? Probably not.
It's also the evenness of the cooking, and you don't get that kind of band of well cooked on the outside and then maybe blood red at the dead center where, you know, at 200 degrees, it takes some time, but it's eventually going to get up to that temperature without all of the kind of contracting of the proteins and the dreaded gray band. And then you've afforded yourself this a little bit of insurance where you can get browning on the outside without having to go as long.
Right. So you're calling for about 2.5 hours at 200 degrees, which will get you about 120 interior with the instant read thermometer, and then let it rest for a full hour to really just reabsorb all those juices. And that gets you to 125, 130, which is rare to medium rare. 135 is probably medium rare, right? You know, so if you like your meat more medium rare, you can, you know, take it out at 125 and it'll get to 135. Obviously,
sure.
That's up to you to how you like it. So then you let it rest and then you sear it in a pan with some oil?
And then you sear it. So the danger of not resting it and going right to the sear is that it's just going to continue to build heat inside that roast. So when you rest it and then sear it, right at that point, the cooking process is done. You're only just barely kind of heating the outer surface of the meat. But what you get, and this is what I was starting to say before, is, you know, all those flavors that you know put on 12 hours to 2 days before, you get incredible flavor development. You know, that rosemary hits the hot oil in the skillet and all that garlic kind of caramelizes and gets kind of like nice and kind of sharp. And that exterior, you know, kind of crust on the meat is going to flavor all of those slices. You know, it's so flavorful that, you know, yes, you have kind of wall to wall, kind of like beautiful pink, you know, medium rare meat inside, but you are getting so much flavor from all those aromatics, like the rosemary and the garlic and, you know, the pepper.
Pretty aggressively
and
seasoned. This was really good.
I'm going to get like a meat sandwich for lunch today. Carl, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
So you bring this beautiful slow roast strip loin out to the party table on a burnished cutting board with a little moat to collect the juices.
Yep, don't have one of those. But.
Well, you should get one.
Yep.
Do you trust your guests to slice the roast itself?
I think people want you to slice the roast.
But not all day. You don't want to slice the whole thing, though, right? Because like, if Chris's point is people are kind of coming and going, because then it'll dry out. Like, you get it started.
I was at a Christmas party this weekend where the hostess, Julia Kramer, in fact, very graciously.
You know where I was? I was at home because my wife was in bed sick after my son was in bed sick all week. I've gone to no holiday events because I'm a sick household, and I am being a bratty little brat about it. I'm not happy.
Well, the one good thing about not spending the weekend at holiday parties is that you probably didn't wake up feeling like a pickled egg on Monday
morning.
Which is exactly. I was like, I need to have a liver flush. Anyway, I was at that party and there were some hams, which we're going to talk about. But graciously, the hostess asked me, knowing that I knew my way around a carving knife, said, could you just get these started? Because she wanted people to feel like they could approach, and she had a whole
Setup. Where to start, and then people know. Then you can follow. Like, oh, it's slice it this thin, slice against the grain.
And so I did, you know, about 25 slices, and that was enough to kind of encourage people to feel like they could go in. And then if I were a hostess, like, what I do usually is I have friends who also know their way around a cutting board, and people like to sort of be put in charge of something. So I don't trust everyone, but I definitely trust some people. And I would say, hey, do me a solid, like, keep an eye on that thing and slice for me. It's like having the grilling friend at a grilling party who, like, wants to have your back.
I also say this. There's also, like, that those of us who have, like, sometimes have party anxiety, having something to do sort of eases.
Yes.
Like, okay, I don't have to just go up and talk to people.
Exactly.
I can be the person
at
the cutting board.
Carla, and then, put me in charge of this thing.
And then they can come talk to me. All right, so that's awesome, Chris, recipe, slow roast beef in the December issue of Bon Appetit. You can find it online also. Carlo, what do you got?
I would love to talk about a party-ready pork roast.
Ooh, party-ready.
Party-ready. She's ready for a party.
Yeah, you're party-ready this month.
She's party-friendly. She's for your party. We had some fun figuring out the recipe name.
The pickled egg thing. You're typically not a big drinker. Have we changed tack
this
on that?
This season has been just like, wow.
You're going old school, Carla?
I'm like OG.
Growing up in Brooklyn, 1980s?
Yep, and I'm like, you know, it's something about also the trend with the natural wines. You just think that, like,
goes down too easy.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, I'm just drinking juice over here.
Yeah.
It's
good for you.
Totally fun. But last night I met a friend at very classic holiday destination, Gramercy Tavern. They always do such a nice job with they had really pretty Christmas decorations up. And when I'm in that mode, I'm like in whiskey sour mode.
Oh, nice.
Delish couple of whiskey sour. Yeah. Some duck liver mousse. Not bad for
Monday
night.
Whiskey sour has like the sugar and the alcohol. All right, but we digress. So you're doing the party ready roast pork, which means what?
Party
exactly?
ready pork roast.
I like all of that. I just don't know what it means.
So this was a recipe that we engineered from the beginning to meet a hole. Sometimes we discover we have these holes in the recipe canon at Bon Appetit, and then we're excited. So we really needed something that wasn't a pork shoulder and it wasn't a crown roast of pork. Again, like things that are, pork shoulder is great, but we've done a lot of those, and it's kind of more of goes toward like a shreddy pulled pork kind of a place. Crown roast of pork, really pain in the butt. It's expensive. It's very big. It is hard to cook.
It's where you take the whole rack of like 8 ribs and you turn it in on itself so it forms a circle and has like the little doilies on it.
Have to lash them together. There's a lot of outer surface area, but then like a lot of inside that doesn't ever really see the light of day. So what we didn't have was just a bone-in pork loin roast that is easy to carve. It's really easy to cook. You can feed a crowd with it. It's very easy to buy. you know, there's no butcher's twine involved and blah, blah.
How many bones are we talking
so
in this rack?
So what we ended up doing is instead of having one, like 6 or 7 bone pork,
yeah,
which would be like the normal anatomically yeah. correct amount of bones.
That's all the pig has to offer.
Is, and we did this with a different rib recipe a couple years ago. We cut that in half. So you have 2-3 bone lengths. And what that does is it just increases the outer surface area. For crunchy bits, but also we wanted to do a dry rub on this because pork, you know, even though it's pork and people think it's fatty, the loin is actually can be fairly lean.
The middle of it is very lean. Muscle. Yeah. There's maybe you have it on the outside, but the inside.
Yeah. So you want to get ideally a pork roast that hasn't been Frenched and it hasn't been trimmed so that you've got the surrounding amount of bones and also a nice amount of fat cap. So don't let the butcher take off too much fat. Fat is flavor.
We've talked about this before in the pod, but just like good pork is so worth it these days to invest in some good, if you can find like the Berkshire heritage breed pork, and it's just like so rich and like that beautiful milky white fat yeah. cap, and it has as much flavor as a ribeye now. It's like whatever the extra cost is, it's 100% worth it.
And it might involve going up to the butcher counter. We really wanted to see what happened if we just went out to the store. So Molly Boz, who developed this recipe, walked herself over to the Whole Foods in our neighborhood and was like, this is what I want. And what she learned was like, when you go up to the butcher counter at Whole Foods, everyone who's there helping you can help you, but there might be only one or two guys who are actually cutting meat, right? So, but she asked for exactly what she wanted. She knew what to ask for. You will know what to ask for because you'll have your printout of the recipe with you, and they'll fabricate it for you. And it's the other advantage to doing 2-3 bone sections is that the dry rub gets into the middle. Yeah. Easier. Like, just think about having like this long tunnel shaped thing to get from the end to the middle is like it's not going to happen.
I feel like we don't have any larding needles in our life. Remember that? Like back in the day, like I feel like in the 1900s when we all had like handlebar mustaches what are the lamb chop sideburns called? Mutton chops and stuff. And like we'd be larding our meat with more fat.
And like eating mutton chops with our mutton chops faces.
The juice getting in our mutton chops.
Well, so that's funny that you mentioned it because in the recipe, Molly calls for a long skewer to like poke into the meat because you actually want to create some holes for this spice rub to get in there.
I'm literally emailing myself right now, larding needles for Christmas.
And I think Chris and I have talked, we need to do a podcast about chopsticks and like chopsticks. But this would be a great place for like just to take out, you know, your ordinary Chinese takeout chopstick, just get it in there. Don't be afraid to poke holes. It's not going to make all the juices run out. It's just going to help the spices.
And you're not even going to notice.
So what is the spice rub?
The spice rub is peppercorn, fennel, salt, pepper, and then it gets some chili flake and ground cinnamon, which is Molly's secret favorite thing.
Is this like a spice mill thing or a mortar and pestle sort of thing? Or?
I think you have to mortar.
Like the peppercorns and the fennel
and stuff? Peppercorn and the fennel seed, and then you just smash those around. You could use a spice mill or a mortar and pestle, but if you really needed to, just put them on a cutting board and use the bottom of a heavy pan to just kind of smack them down and coarsely crush. So you have your 3 bone sections, 2 of those. You poke some holes in there. You got your spice rub. You put that all over it. You let it chill for 8 hours or maybe longer. And then what I really like
just in the fridge, uncovered.
In the fridge, wrapped up, just like Chris's.
Okay.
And then again, you're roasting at 275, which is pretty low. Yeah. And it goes for, you know, around an hour and a half, a little bit longer. But in the pan, also there's leeks, there's potatoes, and there's olive oil.
Drippings.
So what I really like about this dish is at the end of it, you've got all the veg and the meat have like cooked together. You don't have, like Chris is describing, this Thanksgiving dinner where you've got a casserole dish of that and like stovetop for this. This is like all in one. That's why she's party ready, man. She's RTD.
with the pork, okay, we're doing pork. So what temperature are we removing it from the oven then?
We went to 120 on the initial cooking. Again, similar to this, to
and
the
beef.
And
then do we turn up the heat?
Then you turn up the heat and you go up to 500 and you finish cooking it for 10 to 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Until so what it temperature?
Rests, but again, like as far as a do-ahead thing, you can roast the pork and let it rest for 3 whole hours and the vegetables are just sitting there. And then when it's closer to people coming over time, crank up the oven back up to 500, put everything back in. Goes for 20 minutes and then you rest it after that. Only it only needs to rest 15 minutes because again the interior rested. Isn't yeah.
And what temperature are you what temperature you do you want it at when you take it out of the oven?
130
and that'll go up to 140-ish probably.
There's some carryover. I can't remember where we ended up, but it was, you know, it's not dry and gray inside. That was sort of the key.
Mm-hmm. What if I wanted to hit it with the broiler?
You could.
Okay.
You might not need to though at 500.
You always need to. 500. I know, but it never gets as broiled and crispy as a broiler does.
It depends. Maybe let's just say it maybe depends on how good of a fat cap you had.
That's true.
But if you have a good fat cap.
But you know also what I like to do. We've talked about this with like your rotisserie chicken and stuff where you have the veg. Also in our cast iron roast chicken recipe, I like to take the meat out and then put the veg under the broiler for like a minute to get
2.0.
Them all sort of crispy and because they have so much, they're just luxuriating in all that fat and olive oil and stuff.
Yeah.
Just sort of zap them because like the meat's on top of them. Like let them breathe. Let
we
them star
so
a little.
Many single subject podcasts that need to be done. Broiler hasn't, we have not done a broiler only.
It's going to happen.
We haven't done chopstick only. And if I don't get back up on this thing for Rice 3.0, I'm going to die.
Rice is happening.
Rice is happening. Could definitely go another round.
Carla and Emil talking rice for the third round. This is like Rocky 3. Rice 3 is coming out in January.
It's going to be amazing.
So that's going to be awesome.
Can't wait.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works. Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Okay, I want to talk about a New Year's Eve. I did beef tenderloin, like classic filet mignon.
Yeah.
And like I am a hardcore steak guy. I love my crispy ribeyes and bone-in and this and that, yada, yada, yada. But there's something about like filet mignon as like that classy sort of like, ooh, this is like a nice party. Mm-hmm. Even though steak purists will kind of poo-poo it because there's no fat, there's no marbling, you really got to help it out flavor-wise somewhat. But the thing about filet mignon, or what's called beef tenderloin, could not be easier to make. We have a recipe we did a few years ago, roast beef tenderloin with garlic and rosemary. We sort of kind of make a garlic, rosemary, salt and pepper paste, rub it over. What we did, which I thought was really interesting, what you just mentioned, Carla, is that, you know, a tenderloin can be sometimes, if depends on how many people you have, but it could be, you know, 12, 14 inches long. You guys advise slicing it into two sections. So 2 8-inch or whatever, 6-inch sections. And then to get the, in this one, we sear first in a large skillet to get a nice kind of brown going.
Because unlike, you know, the pork roast, you know, it's like, it's easy to sear. You can easily and quickly sear it.
You're rolling it. Yeah, there's no bones.
You're rolling it around, so it's really fast.
Yeah.
You know?
And you're, so you're kind of getting it nice and brown, and then you put it in the oven at 250.
Right.
Again, low, gentle heat, and you want to take it out at about 120 in the middle, and that, and let it rest for 20 minutes or so. And I remember I made that, again, could not have been easier to make. You can do the same thing that you mentioned. You can brown it off beforehand and then just put it in the oven as you're getting ready, like, you know, 45 minutes before you eat, put it in for 20 minutes, let it rest 20 minutes, you're good to go.
No babysitting, no basting.
No,
like
none
anything.
Of that.
Yeah.
And it literally is buttery tender.
Yeah.
Did that, made some pureed potatoes, had those warming on the stove, and I had some spinach. It was like the best dinner. It was like everything was like, oh my God, that's so good. Oh my God, that's so good. that's so good. And we sat down like at 11 p.m. because it was New Year's Eve, and we were all completely hammered by that point. So even the food better. Was even that much better. And it's like, this is the best dinner party ever. But again, like, you know, it's like, it's always when we make the most ambitious things for a dinner party that our dinner parties are the least successful.
I completely agree.
Because as a host, you're stressed out, and the guests are like, oh my God, this is so good, Adam. This is amazing. They feel like obliged to compliment you, as opposed to like that thing where you're having a dinner party and no one's talking because right. everyone's eating, and there's like, and like that's the best compliment when no one says a thing.
I also think that sort of tapping into like classics being classic for a reason and leaning into that a little bit, like that's delicious food, mashed potatoes, spinach, yeah. tenderloin. Like, what do you want?
Yeah, you can make a sauce. I think I'd have done some sort of red wine sauce where it reduced the wine and this and that. And maybe I did the little horseradish thing. But
I bet you had like some kind of bracing salad. That would have been
ooh, this was before I was into bracing salads. Yeah, this was pre-Bon Appetit, Adam. So I was just like, I'm just doing buttery stuff and meaty stuff and lots of champagne. And it worked. No one complained. But now, yes, I would have lots of bracing salads to complement the buttery mashed potatoes and buttery steak. So anyways, yeah, you can never go wrong with that. And like beef tenderloin, super easy to get. You can go to Costco and all those things and just get really the vacuum sealed ones, and they're totally good. Chris, you also, one thing you had in the story, you had a bunch of feature dishes. One thing I've never made before, but we've talked beef, we've talked pork, we've talked ham a lot on this podcast. Maybe we'll forego ham, but one of the dishes you had, which piqued my curiosity, Chris, was, what is it called? A jerk duck? What? Like,
I think it was, we called it jerk spice duck.
Whole duck. I've whole never duck. Made a whole duck before because I'm intimidated by them. There's a ton of fat. Like, I figure if you cook the dark meat all the way through, then the breast meat is overcooked, and like, it eludes me.
Duck has such a weird reputation because it's like fancy.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. Again, fancy in that 1970s sort of way.
Yeah. And what we found is, I mean, in, you know, chicken prices, if you will, for like good heritage breed, you know, nice chickens, like have like gone way up. But ducks, I think because people don't quite know what to do with duck, like they'll buy the pre-confit legs.
Yeah. You will order duck at a restaurant, but not a lot of people make duck at home.
Right, yeah. Not at all. And the thing that you see in restaurants, which to my mind is so completely boring, is just the, you know, the nicely seared breast with all the, you know, the kind of fat cap and
crosshatch. Serve medium rare.
And it's big whoop. Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry.
Wow.
Big friggin' whoop, all right? No, seriously, because it's just not that interesting.
There's a whole bunch of chefs who made their hay in the 1990s that are not happy with
you
right now,
Chris. I understand that. That's fine.
Big whoop was like the most insulting insult I've ever heard.
Adam, I mean, you know, you might still go into a restaurant and order a steak, you know? I feel like I'm sort of like post-steak at this point in my life. Maybe I'll come back around.
I only order steak if I know it's going to be
You know
be
it's
going
to be amazing because I'm sure you can cook a mean steak.
I can,
you know, I can say that unequivocally.
Yeah. You know, and it all starts with buying a good steak.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And so with duck, you know, my way in, I think it was something I'd seen Sam Sifton talking about maybe in like his little like kind of weekly blurb of what is going on in like the New York Times kind of world. And he was just talking about, you know, kind of like just sort of roasting kind of a whole duck or kind of doing something maybe in like kind of an enclosed environment. But anyway, it got my head spinning about, oh, you know, a whole duck where you're not treating it all preciously and you're not like kind of doing kind of like perfectly seared breast and a braisy leg. You know, if you just put a whole duck, you know, maybe you score the skin a little bit up, you know, so that the fat renders a little bit more completely.
Wait, before we get into this.
Yeah.
Speaking of sourcing, is there a particular type of duck we're recommending buying? Because there's lots of different breeds and whatnot, and which
probably
ones?
Probably a Long Island.
Yeah, like Long Island, which
Long
is also
Island
known
duck,
as
which
pekin.
Is a pekin duck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not
which is
to
different
be confused
than
with Peking.
Although right. this your finished preparation kind of goes into Peking territory.
Yeah.
I mean, anyways.
It's yeah. So, you know, just the fact of treating a duck, you know, kind of roasting it whole and taking it past the point where that breast is, you know, medium rare, taking it past the point where it's medium, getting it all the way to where that meat wants to shred, all of a sudden that duck becomes something completely different.
And so, yeah, so how long are we talking and what temperature are we talking?
So this, so it's marinated overnight in kind of a jerk spice marinade, which is a combination of allspice, garlic, rum, soy sauce, rice vinegar. And so it soaks in that.
No scotch bonnets though?
No, well, no, actually that's a good point. Sorry, thank you. Habanero chilies, for sure. We're using 16. And this,
yeah.
This in, and honestly, ducks have
you say
so much,
16 chilies?
I said 16 chilies.
Wow.
No,
that
you
is
know,
a big whoop.
You know what it is? We're roasting two ducks, number one. So let's just think of it as 8 chilies per bird.
Right.
And they are
crazy.
So fatty. And you need so much flavor to get through that fat, to get into, you know, the actual meat of the bird, if you will. We found, you know, we were using, oh God, like 2 habanero chilies. You taste that marinade and your head kind of like blows off. But, you know, it needed more. So yep. We just gave it more. So
I think also, just as an aside, when you're serving food not piping hot, like food at room temperature or cold, the flavors are muted. So that's another reason why, like, over seasoning, if you're planning to serve something kind of all day at room temp, is going to work out for you.
Totally. Yeah.
Otherwise, it's bland.
Yeah. And so, you know, initially you throw the ducks in a 450 oven. So you get really good kind of like, you know, rendering of the skin. Everything gets a head start in terms of browning. And then the oven drops to 250 and the ducks go for, you know, 4 to 5 hours.
And that's key too, because like, they're birds, right? So just think about turkey in the same way, where the leg and the breast are not going to cook at the same rate. So trying to make them happen at the same time is just like a fool's errand. So you pushed it where you're basically confying the leg in the oven and having the breast turn into just shreddy.
Well, which
delicacy.
Which gets back to my favorite Carla Music recipe, the fautisserie chicken, which we talk about often, and you can find on bonappetit.com, FAUX-tisserie.
True.
But, you know, you take a 3.5-pound bird, and you're roasting that for 3 hours at low heat till it's fall apart. And this is kind of the similar. Duck's about 5.5 pounds, so you're going for 4.5 or 5 hours.
Right, and I think the advantage with duck is it's got even more fat. So
yes.
It doesn't go,
the amount of,
it doesn't dry, it just tenderizes.
If you've never cooked duck before, the amount of fat it
comes out. That,
what's the fancy word for comes out?
Render.
That renders. Thank you. The amount of fat that renders is almost shocking. You're like you're swimming in this stuff. It's crazy.
Save that stuff too. I strain all my meat fats.
So after 5 hours.
After 5 hours, you know, it's the skin is not crispy in the way that, you know, you would get from just searing it in a pan, like over, you know, medium high for 20 minutes or whatever. But it is like, it's rendered beautifully. It's kind of crispy. The skin is something that you absolutely want to tear into and eat. I was at Cosme a couple months back working on an upcoming story with Daniela Sotoinez, the chef there, and they had just hotel pan after hotel pan, like the deep ones, the big ones, which is like a deep metal tray that they use to make their duck carnitas in. And it is just, those ducks are just swimming in fat and aromatics and, you know, kind of oranges and all kinds of spices. And, you know, and I don't think it's so far a stretch to think of, you know, jerk spice as like kind of fitting with the holidays. You know, you've kind of got like rum, you've got allspice, you've got these warm spice notes, you know, and then you have like, you mix it up with a little bit of like heat and, you know, and soy sauce and everything. And, you know, it's just, it forms like this beautiful meat that holds up really well. And, you can make like the most delicious kind of like tacos or wraps.
Yeah, let's talk about how you serve it. So you've got this beautiful fall apart tender duck that's just ready for the shredding, and then what do you do with it?
So I found that serving it on a flour tortilla, almost as though it were kind of going to like somewhere between mushu pork and like a taco, you know, like those kind of, you know, duck carnitas tacos that they do at Cosme.
We're going from like Jamaica to China to Mexico.
Going around the world.
All over, yeah.
And I, you know, just doing some finely shredded cabbage, some finely shredded kind of fresh ginger, chilies, scallions, All that, like a few squeezes of lime juice and other herbs like mint, cilantro, just so delicious. I mean, it's not, you know, what you, the first thing you think of when you think of Christmas entertaining, but actually I think the flavors like really work.
But it means it's
super
got
fun.
You covered, you know, deep, rich, browned, fatty, warm spice,
bringing the balance.
And then you needed something on the crunchy. Crunchy, fresh.
Are you looking for the word bracing?
Yeah, I guess.
Even bracing.
Even bracing. And then I feel like, you know, if you wanted to do this on a Martin's roll, then like go for it. The soft tortilla totally works. It's just like if you're standing around at a party, you need a way to get this thing into your face without like just, you know, bringing the plate up, little cocktail size appetizer plate. So, you know, that to me is why it all works, even though it's not one thing or another, but like it all kind of comes together.
But I think it makes total sense. As you said, that meat is so rich and fatty and crispy and delicious, and having just like fresh ginger and like the little like scallions cut in the bias like you get when you get Peking duck, and having the lime to squeeze on, and the cabbage and the fresh mint. It's just like it's so bright and fresh, and it's such a perfect compliment.
What do you drink with that? That's a tough one. Some natty wine,
Something
I guess.
With bubbles. Yeah. Bubbles all the way.
Yeah. Like a sort
of a beer would be good, actually.
Beer would be nice, or a tart petnat, you know?
Sure.
Something fruity and fizzy.
Great.
This guy with the natural wine.
I know.
I'm going to have another keg.
What happened to me?
Drank the Kool-Aid so hard.
Oh, good Lord. All right, Carla, I'm going to let you. We said we weren't going to talk about this.
Great.
But we got a few more minutes.
Okay.
Your argument for not cooking anything at all when you have your sort of holiday day.
I think it depends. Like, so at our Christmas in the Lolly family, we go really big for Christmas Eve. So we do Feast of Seven Fishes, and we go
as featured on the Bon Appetit Foodcast last year.
Yeah, that is correct. It's also my son's birthday.
That's insane evening. If you haven't listened to that one, go back and look. Whatever, December 2017. Look for the Carl Lolly music. treatise on the Feast of Seven Fishes.
I think throughout
it's
the
insane.
Whole thing, you kept saying, you don't do that.
Yeah.
And I was like, we do. We do the whole thing. But so it's my son was born on Christmas Eve. We have
Which
like
one?
A whole,
you have two.
The older one. So it's like a whole sort of celebration of him during the day. And then at night, it's Feast of Seven Fishes. And the other day he asked me like, why does it go so late? And I was like, well, honey, it's because no one comes over till 8 p.m. Like, that's why it ends at 2 in the morning.
All right. So, wait, we go. Leo's older now. Does he want to be feted, or is he like, mom, stop bothering
me?
Okay,
this is a whole other story. But this year, he's turning 15.
Oh,
so,
boy.
We actually moved Feast of Seven Fishes to the 23rd.
Oh.
We are going to celebrate Feast of Seven Fishes on the 23rd so that he can have a party where he doesn't have to hang out with like all the septuagenarians.
Yes, exactly.
Family who he loves, but it's like, really,
just
this
not
is my
much.
Birthday. And then we're coming back in for Christmas Day, but it's great. This is what we need, because that Christmas Eve celebration is really the main celebration. So Christmas Day, you have to you got to take it easy. Otherwise, the holidays are just too much work. So for Christmas Day, my mom hosts Christmas Eve, and now I host Christmas Day. And my approach to Christmas Day is buy the best of everything, set it out in a lovely array, and let people just come and graze all day, and just makes it really, really easy on the host.
So what do you set out?
Russ and Daughters,
which
the greatest schmear known to man, Jewish appetizers. So bagel, lox, gaspe, nova.
What is gaspe?
Well, what's gaspe?
It's just a type. I think it's Scottish. It's one of types of cured fish. White fish salad, chubs, you know, cream cheese, two different kinds, like bialy, black bread, that whole situation.
Ooh,
slicing onions, tomatoes, capers, like that deal. Yes,
Adam.
Do you
put a toaster on the buffet table? Whoa. People want to toast there.
No, I don't. And we've talked about this, and now I don't believe in toasting bagels anymore.
But you have to toast
fresh
bialy.
Bagels.
You can't not toast a bialy.
Bialy
has to be toasted.
The toaster's in the oven, in the
you
kitchen.
Don't do that.
Emma is looking aghast at you.
At not toasting bagels? You know, if you pick them up that
if
day,
fresh. If they're fresh,
you
don't need to.
And it's like a whole other thing. No.
I'm fine with not toasting the bagel. You have to toast.
Fine.
The
you can go in the kitchen. There's a lovely Breville toaster oven in there.
We'll be waiting for Adam.
Enjoy. And then I already ordered my panettone from Roy, which Oprah wrote about this year, but I think Claire wrote about like 3 years ago. So you're welcome, Roy. It all worked out. So I've got two giant panettone coming from Roy.
Can you talk about who Roy is?
So Roy is like a crazy baker. He's in Northern California. His company is called From Roy. What is Roy's last name? If you go online and search Panettone From Roy, and he is someone who has dedicated himself singularly to the craft of making the most incredible panettone, which most people will say that's not saying much because panettone is a horrible thing. And if you've had most panettone, yes, I agree with you. But the way that he makes them, they defy gravity. They're so beautifully flavored. They're not cheap, but they are like 100% worth it. Ordered mine a couple weeks ago, so it's coming. His Instagram's really cool, like the crazy size the mixer he has.
Dried fruit or little bits of chocolate in
there? Lots of varieties. He has like a pistachio one. He has a chocolate and orange one. Yeah. They're really special and delicious. So I set out some of those and some fish eggs, you know, got to have some fish eggs. Man, so some black ones, some orange ones. If I do anything, eggs. I might make blini, maybe.
I will be in Buffalo on Christmas Day and there will be none of that.
Yeah.
Just whatever it is, it's not going to be all that.
Even with even though I'm not cooking anything, with like the setting it out and the plattering of it and the slicing the onions.
You're still hosting.
Yeah, you're hosting.
Hosting is a job. And you know what else you're doing, Carla?
What am I doing?
You're cleaning up afterwards.
Right.
Like hosting is not, I mean, we talk about hosting. We all like to host. It's awesome. But let's not ever pretend that it's not a lot of work and that it doesn't take it out of you.
Yep. So big bowls of clementines all over the table. Lots of wine that you put outside so it's cold. People can go get their cold thing. You got to toast, you know, to another year on earth and just let other people do all the crafting.
I need to get more holiday-ish.
I know, but now I want to make the jerk duck. I'm like, oh, maybe I'm not going to do that.
I got to call Simone's dad and we got to...
Make a plan.
We got to make a plan because, I have some ambitions for Buffalo this year.
You can definitely get your tenderloin up there.
The strip loin. Well, a tenderloin, we've done that before, although I've talked about this on the pod. I cooked it definitely not a degree above rare/medium rare, and that did not go over so well at the table in Buffalo. There was lots of leftovers, but then that's what gave birth to my stroganoff recipe that I did in the magazine because we had so much leftover tenderloin the next day. Then I fried that up and then put in like the sour cream and the mustard and then the mushrooms. And that was a huge hit with the buttered egg noodles.
So they wanted more of a well done situation?
Let's just move on. So yeah, we're not getting that, but yeah, there could be something else. But the party ready pork roast. That could be a hit up in Buffalo.
Big time.
Yeah.
It's got a lot built in appeal and like it really pays off.
God, I'm hungry. To recap, you can find on ButtAppetite.com, you can find Party Ready Pork Roast. You can also find Roast Beef Tenderloin with garlic and rosemary. And then in the December issue of Bon Appetit, you got Chris's jerk spiced duck as well as your slow roast beef.
Exactly.
Guys, thanks so much. God, can't wait for Christmas.
Super fun.
Cool. Thanks.
The Bon Appetit Foodcast is produced by Carrie Polis and Christina Che and produced and edited by Emma Wortsman. Our theme music is by Nathaniel Wortsman. We have new episodes every Wednesday, and if you want to tell us about this or any other episode, email us at bonappetitfoodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.